Chapter 3. Cultural History Destroyed. The International Smuggling and Illegal Excavation of Antiquities. The Polaroids were a problem for Giacomo Medici. It all began in October 1994 in Pulach, a municipality outside Munich. Actually, the German and Italian police were only looking for clues in connection with 8 Hellenic terracotta vases that had been stolen 9 months earlier from the castle museum in the small city of Melfi in southern Italy. What the investigators found led to the discovery of the biggest antiquities smuggling scandal in modern times, a scandal that shook the very foundations of the museum world. In the villa in Pulach, the investigators came upon documents that quickly put them on the trail of the art dealer Giacomo Medici and his Swiss company Edition Service. 11 months after the discovery in Pulach, 3 Swiss and 3 Italian police officers, a Swiss judge, and an officially commissioned photographer stood before room 23 in hallway 17 on the 5th floor of the warehouse in Geneva's Freeport, search warrant in hand. When the port director opened the door, the investigators found mountains of photographs, armoires filled with antique art objects, and a safe 1.5 meters tall, which housed the most valuable pieces. The number of prints, negatives, and Polaroids alone in the investigators' report numbered some 4,000. The investigators had to look only at a few of the pictures before it became instantly clear to them what they had stumbled upon. The pictures showed ancient vases, statues, floor mosaics, and frescoes to which clumps of earth adhered. They were obviously dug up and photographed by so-called tombaroli, robbers who plunder archaeological sites. Room 23 in the distinguished Genevan depot, according to the accusations of the police, was nothing other than a sales room in which Giacomo Medici sold his customers art objects from Italy, Greece, and other countries. The objects came from illegal excavations and didn't have the export permissions legally required by the respective antiquities authorities. The photographs in the Geneva warehouse had served as a kind of catalog for this dealer in stolen goods, who has since been convicted. Documents accompanying the photos showed who his clients were, and evidence of the illegal sales came in the form of bills of lading, expert opinions, invoices, and checks. The investigators uncovered the names of collectors who had long been suspected of buying stolen goods. But until this discovery, the investigators had lacked proof of their suspicions, and some of the documents were electrifying, tying the scheme to one of the most respected art museums in the world, the J. Paul Getty Museum in Malibu. It was the first time that an important public art institution was implicated in the systematic, illegal plunder of cultural assets. The Getty Museum, which has since moved into a gigantic art castle designed by Starchitect Richard Meyer that sits atop a hill in Los Angeles, is considered the richest art institution in the world. The oil billionaire John Paul Getty created a foundation upon his death in 1976 with an endowment of $700 million. In order to maintain its non-profit tax-exempt status, the foundation is required to spend several million every year to support the museum. For decades, the Getty has been able to buy what other institutions can no longer afford, paintings by Pontormo and Van Gogh, valuable photographs and books, and also artworks of classical antiquity. A museum in court. The direction of the Department of Classical Antiquity had since April 1986 rested on the shoulders of the curator, Marion True. When she arrived at the Getty at the age of 36, the museum was in the process of significantly expanding its collection of antiquities in order to keep pace with the competition, such as the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. As she sat in court in Rome, accused of receiving stolen goods, smuggling national cultural assets, and indirect support of the theft of archaeological finds, it was established that she was comfortable with many methods of acquisition. According to the complaint against her, she absolutely knew that many of the new purchases that she made were from illegal excavations and thus did not have the requisite export licenses, a requirement under both U.S. and Italian criminal law. Both she and the administration of the museum had long denied that they were aware of the illegal source of the artifacts. But then hundreds of documents that were leaked to the Los Angeles Times unveiled a different set of facts. The documents, which a disgruntled employee had leaked to hurt his boss, were partly handwritten and could have come only from the museum itself. They proved unequivocally that the management of the museum must have known very early on that a substantial part of the antiquities collection was acquired from illegal sources. Giacomo Medici told the administration of the museum in 1985, for example, that three objects that the Getty wanted to acquire had been removed illegally from excavation sites near Naples. Nonetheless, the museum proceeded, undeterred, to pursue the ultimately successful purchase for $10.2 million. In another letter, the art dealer Robert Emanuel Hecht, Jr., told the curator Marion True that the police were searching for an ancient urn. Despite that, the Getty later acquired that very object. Hecht at first withdrew an ancient Pellicci vase, which Hecht had also tried to sell to the museum in the mid-1980s, writing to True, "Yesterday my friend broke off the negotiations because the Carabinieri were looking for the Pellicci with the arms of Achilles. Therefore he won't get it. Perhaps others will buy it. Sorry. All my best, Bob." In July 1986, the Getty acquired the vase nonetheless for $42,000. In 1993, the museum bought a gold burial wreath, although True herself had at first characterized the acquisition as too dangerous. Later, she even received an Interpol telex that described the wreath as being of illegal origin. In internal memos also leaked to the Los Angeles Times, the director of the museum at that time, John Walsh, and the chairman of the board of the Getty Trust, which controls the museum, Harold Williams, mused about the traffic in stolen cultural goods. Purely hypothetically and prophylactically, they later asserted, "Are we prepared to purchase stolen property out of overriding principles?" Harold Williams freely admitted to the context of the True prosecution. For decades, it was common practice for respectable museums and collectors to acquire artifacts without documentation of their origin, in particular when the possible countries of origin did nothing to secure their excavation sites or to improve their laws. Many of the details that came to light in the Getty proceeding are anything but appetizing, but True gave up her position at the Getty only when it came out that she had bought a vacation home on the Greek island of Paros with a $400,000 loan from the art dealer Christo Michelidis, who together with his business partner, Robin Symes, had sold the Getty artworks valued at more than $30 million during Marion True's tenure there. The Secret Antiquities Network. Italian prosecutors were able to prove quickly that a systematic network for trading in stolen property had operated at all levels, from the Tombaroli to certain antiquities dealers and on to prominent institutions and museums. A piece of ruled paper with handwriting that had turned up in the search was decisive for the investigators in this regard. A copy was shown to the writer Peter Watson, who, together with the journalist Cecilia Todeschini, published a book about the case, The Medici Conspiracy. Watson describes the spectacular find in his book. "The whole thing showed nothing less than the organizational diagram of the secret antiquities smuggling networks throughout Italy, Switzerland, and other countries, naming every single person in the entire hierarchy, from the very top to the very bottom, and everyone in between. Moreover, it was annotated with the relationships of these people to each other, who supplied whom, who was in competition with whom, which middlemen supplied from which Italian regions, and what relationship they had to international dealers, museums, and collectors. It was breathtaking." The blue ballpoint pen writing was easy to read. In the upper right in capital letters, Robert Bob Hecht, with two horizontal arrows to Paris and USA, museums and collectors. In the end, Hecht stood accused along with Marion True before the court in Rome. Medici was sentenced in Rome in 2004 to 10 years confinement and a monetary penalty of 10 million euros. True resigned from her position in September 2005, when, in 2007, she was ready to testify about the structures inside the Getty Museum. The civil case against her was dropped by the Italians. Many criminal charges against her had meanwhile aged past the statute of limitations. Her business partner, Robin Symes, who is said to have 33 art and antiquities depots in his control, was convicted in 2005. Then, in 2014, in one of his warehouses in Geneva, investigators discovered 45 crates of artifacts that had been stolen from excavations in Sicily, Apulia, and Calabria in the 1970s. They were returned to Italy. Following the successful investigations, Italy demanded the return of 42 ancient artifacts from the Getty Museum alone. Meanwhile, attorneys working at the behest of the museum have carried out research, and they found that many more exhibition pieces in the museum's collections are involved. At least 82 objects on display can be traced back to art dealers whom authorities accuse of illegal practices, but from whom the Getty regularly made purchases anyway. Of the 104 ancient art objects that the museum itself labels as masterpieces, 54 have questionable provenance. The list of individual cases of questionable practices at the museum has grown long and thus reveals systemic misconduct. As a young curator gave up his post in 1986, he summarized the developments at the Getty that had been going on for years. In a letter, he said that the museum was guilty of deliberate blindness regarding the circumstances in the antiquities department. Almost prophetically, the art historian wrote that curatorial greed would lead to an external investigation, and that a foreign government would demand the return of stolen cultural assets. 20 years later, that's exactly what happened. But the Getty wasn't the only institution implicated. The Italian authorities conducting the investigations quickly turned their attention to the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, the Toledo Museum of Art, the Princeton University Art Museum, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. The Board of Trustees of the Metropolitan acquired a vase in 1972 that has since become world famous. It was painted in approximately 515 BCE by Euphronius and came from an Etruscan grave. The site robber received $880, but the Metropolitan paid $1 million to Robert Hecht. When the archaeologist and antiquities curator, Oscar White Muscarella, publicly voiced his opposition to the acquisition of the piece by the museum, he received notice of his termination from Met Director Thomas Hoving because of social incompetence with colleagues. Muscarella, who successfully litigated against this dismissal, as well as two other attempts to fire him, is considered worldwide to be one of the most knowledgeable experts on the cultures of the Near East and the conscience of his field. Again and again, he has pointed out that the illegal purchase of ancient artworks by private collectors and museums contributes to the destruction of excavation sites, the loss of contexts of the artifacts, and thereby the erasure of ancient cultures themselves. His employer, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, had warned him repeatedly about alleged disloyalty and defamation. Hoving's successor, Philippe de Montebello, attempted in vain to fire this inconvenient employee. In the spring of 2006, however, de Montebello met his own downfall. In order to avoid an embarrassing proceeding parallel with the true prosecution, he finally announced, after extended resistance, that he was ready to yield to the pressure of the Italian cultural minister at the time, Rocco Buttiglione, to return the Euphronius vase to Italy, along with 15 pieces from the silver hoard at Morgantina. Buttiglione had threatened beforehand that otherwise Italy would no longer approve the loan of art to the museum. The spoils of war in museums. War can lead to an increase in supply and, correspondingly, an increase in demand, as, for example, with the 2003 conflict in Iraq. And the art market is a seller's market. Only what is offered can be acquired. Whether the source is legal or illegal is a matter of indifference to some collectors. In Baghdad, both the National Library, which was later burned, and the National Museum were systematically plundered. The U.S. military showed no interest in the security of either, despite early warnings from experts. Ancient excavation sites, which had already been severely damaged by heavy military vehicles, had no protection at all after the end of the war. Under the Hussein regime, the administration of antiquities departments, and the protection of archaeological monuments and excavation sites had collapsed. Many archaeological sites, such as the ancient city of Nimrud, where teams of international researchers had worked up until the war, were left to the mercy of organized groups of thieves. Later, the landscape was as cratered as the moon. The civil war in Syria and the absence of protection for archaeological sites there have similarly led to an increase in illegal transactions. According to the U.S. government, terrorist organizations were involved. In 2015, Undersecretary of State Andrew Keller presented a paper at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, according to which the Islamic State had established its own Ministry for Natural Resources, with subdepartments for excavations, research of new and old discovery sites, as well as the marketing and sale of antiquities. 700 objects destined for sale, some of them plundered from the museum in Mosul, were found in the possession of the assassinated Islamic State leader Abu Sayyaf. The documents and receipts seized prove that, while the Islamic State didn't itself do the excavation work, it gave out licenses for others to do so. 20% of the profit from sales had to be diverted to the Islamic State as taxes. In October 2019, at the Kerem Shalom border crossing to the Gaza Strip, Israeli authorities seized ancient Greek coins in a truck that was supposedly transporting textiles. They were prohibited from commerce because of their age, about 2,300 years, and the absence of documentation of a legal provenance. According to information from the U.S. Treasury, Hezbollah is supposed to fund itself by way of a prominent art dealer in Lebanon. Worldwide business. The European Union prohibited the import and export of cultural goods from Iraq and Syria and the commerce in such goods. But this did nothing to stop the illegal import. It's always easy to manufacture the necessary documentation of provenance. In his treatise on the illegal trade in cultural goods, the journalist Gunther Wessel cites the archaeologist Neil Brody of the Scottish Centre for Crime and Justice Research at Glasgow University. If you go to a dealer and say that you need a provenance to go with the object that you want to buy, you'll get it. You get a piece of paper on which the names of one or two previous owners are listed. Perhaps there's a signature. You can accept that or not. You have to decide for yourself. If, for example, you want to buy an Iraqi object in London, and there you are presented with a provenance that says that the artifact has been in a family collection in Jordan since the 1950s, you have two choices. You could examine the document yourself and say, "That doesn't seem very likely." It's much more likely that the object comes from an illegal excavation last week. Or you say to yourself, "Yes, it's my provenance. Jordanian family since the 1950s. Great." And when you resell it later, then you have your documentation of provenance. Markus Hilgert, the former director of the Near East Museum in Berlin and the current general secretary of the Cultural Foundation of the German States, explains, "The most expensive items are precisely those that are not sold publicly, and many finds are warehoused in free ports, perhaps for years, until the traces of their origin have disappeared." In 2002, the German Federal Criminal Investigation Office was aware of about 2,000 instances of the illegal trade in cultural goods that had been discovered. In 2011, that number had climbed to 2,400. UNESCO estimates the value of transactions in antiquities for that same year at $6 billion to $8 billion annually. That number is disputed, however. The International Association of Dealers in Ancient Art stated 5 years earlier that the value of this commerce was 440 million euros, of which 180 million euros was transacted at the two great auction houses, Christie's and Sotheby's. The claim that the illegal trade affects the German market and that terrorist organizations had financed themselves from the proceeds was placed in question in 2019, at least by the industry association Interessengemeinschaft Deutscher Kunsthandel, founded in January 2019, a collective of six membership organizations that do lobbying work together. In the summer of 2019, an initial progress report was published by the ILLICID illicit study, financed with 1.2 million euros, and produced by the German Federal Ministry for Education and Research, the cultural foundation Stiftung Preußischer Kulturbesitz, the Fraunhofer Institute for Secure Information Technology, and the Leibniz Institute for Social Sciences in Mannheim. The investigation is supposed to develop and test efficient methods and tools to investigate, document, and analyze information regarding the illegal trade in cultural goods in Germany, according to the project description. Against the background of the latest political developments in Iraq and Syria, the study concentrates especially on the dynamic market in ancient cultural goods from the Eastern Mediterranean. No acquittal for the trade. In a press release, the industry association celebrated the preliminary findings as essentially an acquittal for the art business. After 3 years of research and 1.2 million euros in costs, the results of the illicit study have come in. It was begun to investigate the illegal trade in cultural goods in Germany. It has found nothing. The final report contains no indications of theft from archaeological sites, terror financing, or money laundering. Apart from the fact that, contrary to representations in the media, the preliminary findings are plainly not a final report, the self-declared acquittal disregards what the report actually says. It can hardly be used, as it was, as a supposed argument against the German law for cultural protection, which has been vehemently opposed by the art trade. Critical archaeologists point to other interpretations, starting with the goals that were set for the study. The study does not address Germany's role as the principal place for the illegal art market. In order to do that, a comparative analysis would be necessary. The academic blog Archaeologik additionally points out that the high number of forgeries convincingly suggests that in Western Europe there is a lucrative market for antiquities. As much as possible, the finds offered for sale were identified and classified by referring to academic and professional indexes. Only 24% were very likely to be authentic, genuine pieces. For 12%, forgery was highly suspected. For Near East cultural goods, even 24%. 2,387 objects, 39.9% of the inventory observed, potentially came from Syria or Iraq. These high numbers in no way indicate, according to independent archaeologists, that the trade in excavated objects is almost exclusively legal. Compared with the guidelines in the German laws for the protection of culture, only 2.1% of the finds offered, 128 pieces, had a verifiable provenance tracing back to a date before the deadline in the law, April 26, 2007, or inside the EU, December 12, 1992. 43% of the objects were proven to be illegal under the conditions set forth in the law, because the provenance was prior to the deadline, approximately 32%, or did not exist, or had been falsified, approximately 11%. The following are the numbers with respect to the German laws for cultural protection. Verifiable provenance before the deadlines, 2.1%, 128 pieces. Unverifiable but detailed provenance before the deadlines, 6.9%, 1,039 pieces. Unverifiable provenance without detail before the deadlines, 38.1%, 2,337 pieces. Unverifiable provenance without detail after the deadlines, 31.9%, 1,958 pieces. Contradictory or falsified provenance, no provenance, 0.9%, 671 pieces. Compared with the EU statutory standards, only 0.4% of the declarations of provenance for objects from Iraq and only 9.6% of those from Syria fulfill the legal requirements. Only 2.1% are innocent. The statistical basis for the illicit study was questionable. The blog Archaeologik explains, it did not permit comprehensive collusions. On the one hand, the 6,133 objects are the sum total of the antiquities that can be unquestionably grouped for purposes of examination, of which, as elaborated upon above, only 2.1% are recognizable as conforming completely with the laws, although the deadlines in the law, which become later and later, present their own problem. Thus, 97.9% of them are suspicious cases, because antiquities come from archaeological excavation sites for which the finds must be reported almost everywhere and export licenses are required, or they are placed in museums or scientific institutes and therefore don't reach the market. It is furthermore to be noted that the 6,133 objects in the study represent only objects that could be included without question. The numbers in the report must be understood thusly. Numerous coins and small finds from the Hellenistic or Roman periods are offered for sale that cannot be traced because of the lack of a declaration of provenance or because the region of origin is difficult to prove. As a result of the cultural similarities across the Mediterranean, for example, they could come from North Africa, and therefore such objects were not considered. Testing the provenance provided was, of course, only partially possible. Reference was made to old auction catalogs, storage and loan lists, publications and databases from collections, but also lists of losses from museums and depots, the databanks of Interpol as well as lost art. It must be noted that objects stolen from excavation sites can scarcely be identified by this process because they come fresh out of the ground and thus cannot be included in such listings. With regard to the illicit study, the German newspaper Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung also came to a different conclusion from that of the art trade associations, pointing out that the study was essentially based on questionnaires sent to all German art dealers. It remained questionable whether the evaluation of the immediately accessible business and the reports of those questioned was sufficient to track the trade in goods stolen from excavation sites and their more or less visible commercial pathways, or whether it's necessary to use investigative forces. No respectable dealer, nor any sophisticated criminal, would openly try to sell something that he himself considers illegal. The real gray market lies beyond the auction catalog. Even here, the procedures of the study and its ability to reach conclusions were placed in doubt. From the perspective of the countries of origin, the small number of seized objects does not ameliorate the urgency of the problem. In addition, the international protection of art is less well established than, for example, the search for drugs, and commands less investigative power. That means that the dark numbers might be disproportionately high in relation to the cases on record. In fact, many stolen cultural goods with unclear provenance appeared on the European art market during and after the war in Iraq, especially in France, Great Britain, and Germany. The Iraqi cultural minister, Mufid el-Jassiri, spoke in November 2003 of 14,000 plundered exhibition pieces. 3 years later, just about 4,000 of them were voluntarily returned, discovered, or impounded. And today, after another decade and a half has passed, there is a list of missing items online. An acquittal would be something else again. The effective prohibition on trade in antiquities without the required documents is still problematic. In the case of pieces, for example, that have been in the possession of a collector or family for a number of years, since a time when it was not yet a requirement to present official export papers of the country of origin when purchasing an antiquity legally. Still, the object can't be contraband or something stolen from an excavation site, and today it's hard to sell such pieces without running into difficulties. Legislators have not yet found a solution for this general suspicion, which can have both criminal and severe financial consequences. The Golden Hat Without a Provenance. When the Berlin Museum of Prehistory and Early History acquired one of only four known golden hats for 1.5 million Deutschmarks through a Frankfurt art dealer, the source was given only as a private collection in Switzerland that was built up in the 1950s and 1960s. Further inquiries were blocked. Material examination demonstrated, meanwhile, that the artifact is indeed about 3,000 years old and comes from the late Bronze Age. Everything else about the object is shrouded in mystery, including where it was found, who found it, and who the intermediaries were. Wolfgang Schonleber, who was for many years the antiquities expert for the District Criminal Office for the state of Baden-Württemberg, in Stuttgart, Germany, said at the time that there were no concrete demands for the object's return from Italy or Greece, which were thought to have been the possible countries of origin. To be sure, the art department of the Carabinieri searched the Antiquities Museum in Berlin for the origin of 24 ancient vases from Apulia. Proof of their illegal acquisition was not found. But that doesn't mean, explained Schoenleber, that there's not a problem. The pivot point and hub for the sale of stolen antiquities at the moment is Frankfurt. At the time, the acquisition of stolen artworks from antiquity was not a punishable offense in Germany. At last, in November 2007, after 37 years of delay, Germany yielded to international pressure and ratified the 1970 Convention for the Protection of Cultural Property of UNESCO. This declaration was even then already outdated, and in Germany, in particular, was not translated into a national law. Of course, EU proscriptions since 1992 prohibit the illegal import of cultural goods from the partner countries Italy and Greece, and since 2003 from Iraq. The impossibility of proving that a single piece came, in fact, from one of the proscribed countries and was not found 20 kilometers over the border in a neighboring country precludes most prosecutions. Anyone with an ounce of common sense knows that it's all but impossible to obtain antiquities from ancient excavation sites legally, affirmed Michael Müller-Karpa, a curator at the Römisch-Germanisches Zentralmuseum in Mainz, Germany. I'm not aware of any country in the Near East that permits any kind of export. The one exception is Israel, but there are strict conditions that are enforced. Müller-Karpa has therefore spoken in favor of a complete ban on the trade in antiquities. The working group of German art dealers accordingly called Müller-Karpa a fundamentalist archaeologist in a press release, accused him of waging a defamation campaign, and grouped him along the spectrum close to Islamic extremists. But Müller-Karpa found support from his colleague in New York, Oscar White Muscarella. It's true, many collectors and museum directors argue that excavated objects are more secure with them than in their country of origin. The objects that these directors securely protect were ripped from the earth, the place and cultural context in which they originated forever destroyed. I've worked in the Near East a long time and have seen excavation sites destroyed. Holes made by exploding dynamite, retractable belt stanchions, bulldozers. All the objects are gotten out of the ground as quickly as possible, brought to various dealers and smuggled out of the country and sold to museums. What is secure about that? The museum's claims are not simply lies, but despicable attempts to justify their crimes. It's precisely the university museums at Harvard, Princeton, Missouri, and Indiana that are the leading thieves and destroyers of world history. The destruction of history. Cultural destruction refers not only to the material harm, but also the cultural damage that site robbers cause. It's of tremendous importance to researchers to know where exactly and in what context historical finds are made. Were the objects found inside, outside, or at all near buildings? What was in the area? Are there indications of usage that can be recognized? Are the objects interred in graves, or are they everyday objects? The thieves usually concentrate on metal objects and leave the ceramics, the material and form of which can provide incriminating information about the date of the find. These problems don't occur only in countries in Central and South America, Arabia, Africa, or Asia, where there were well-known early civilizations and cultures. Eckhart Laufer, the antiquities expert for the Hessian police and contact person for the preservation of monuments there, points to a little-noticed aspect of the problem. In Germany itself, there are objects stolen from excavation sites and sold to museums despite murky provenance. One only has to think of the sky disk of Nebra, or the discovery of treasure at Bullenheimer Mountain. Many German museums to which such finds were offered could recognize what was what, but they closed both eyes and argued that such finds were better off with them in the museum than that they should disappear into some dark channel. Those responsible know exactly what they're doing. They are creating a market for illegal goods and thus ensuring that site robberies continue to be seen as lucrative, and so they continue to occur. I would wish that more curators would dare to take the step of going to the police. but changing the mindset in Germany is a slow process. Indeed, two known site robbers dug up the 4,000-year-old sky disk of Nebra from the Mittelberg, a mountain in Ziegelrode Forest, in the German state of Saxony-Anhalt, on July 4, 1999. One day later, they sold the bronze plate with the oldest known representation of the sky and stars, along with other found objects, for 31,000 Deutschmarks to an antiques dealer in Cologne. Allegedly, the sky disk was offered for sale for 1 million Deutschmarks in Berlin and Munich. As it became clear that the find belonged to the state of Saxony-Anhalt, it furtively changed ownership several times. In consultation with the museum educator Hildegard B., a teacher named Reinhold S. bought it in the summer, allegedly in good faith, as B. later testified in court. The two attempted to sell it for 700,000 Deutschmarks to the state archaeologist of Saxony-Anhalt. The district court of Naumburg sentenced the woman, who was then 44 years old, to 12 months confinement for sale of stolen goods, and gave the man a 6-month sentence. The appeals proceeding 2 years later affirmed the sentences, which had been suspended in favor of probation. The artifact turned up in Switzerland, where the two current owners had stored it. The two site robbers were sentenced a week earlier to 4 months and 9 months probation, respectively. Since 2002, the sky disk may be seen in the Museum for Prehistory of the State of Saxony-Anhalt in Halle, Germany. In the high plateau of Bullenheimer Mountain, near Neustadt an der Aisch in Upper Bavaria, there was plainly a settlement in the Late Bronze Age that was an important trading post. The area was first investigated in the mid-1970s by the State Office for the Preservation of Monuments, which recognized its importance. Nonetheless, for decades, illegal excavators with metal detectors were permitted to search for treasures unscientifically, without any kind of documentation and without regard for the context of the finds. Among the first were U.S. soldiers stationed in Würzburg, who used minesweepers to excavate. In the 1990s, the plateau was a cratered landscape. It's possible that the Golden Hat of Berlin also came from here. When the state trades in stolen goods. Sometimes German authorities are involved quite directly in the trade in ancient cultural assets. In the fall of 2018, the two auction lists of the Munich Treasury Office quickly disappeared, quietly and secretly, and without any comment. Anyone entering the corresponding URLs received only an error message. On a third site, where the authorities had given notice of a larger auction, including antiquities, on September 12th, there remained a brief note. The liquidation of the ancient objects and art objects has been stopped, and they will not be auctioned. If a request for clarification was made in Munich, the response was simply, organizational reasons. In September, the Treasury offered for sale, instead of the antiquities, a collection of traditional German clothing, such as 23 pairs of the men's knee pants known as Lederhosen and Kniebundhosen, along with 4 similarly styled vests and 5 Dirndl, traditional women's dresses in southern Germany and Austria, cultural goods of a different order. Apart from organizational reasons for the clandestine cancellation, there were other causes. Around 700 objects from the most varied epochs and continents were supposed to go under the hammer once again, many of them made of gold. A pre-Columbian vessel from the North Peruvian culture, Lambayeca, for 5,000 euros. A Scythian bracelet for 600 euros. And a semicircular golden sacrificial knife, or tumi, from the same region and period for 15,000 euros. The state of Bavaria estimated the value of the ancient objects to be in total 110,000 euros. At least 2 embassies, those of Egypt and Peru, which had not been informed of the sale in advance, protested to the government of Bavaria against the planned sale on the grounds that the cultural goods might be stolen objects for which the countries had claims. Already in the summer of that same year, absurdly low minimum bids were listed in 2 auctions that were to take place in an unassuming building in the vicinity of the Hohenzollernplatz in Munich. The items listed for sale and pictured on the website, which was later removed, included a pre-Columbian Peruvian bronze mask, 500 CE to 1000 CE, for 60 euros, a painted ancient Egyptian mummy mask for 120 euros, a group of prehistoric hand tools made of bone for 15 euros, and countless pre-Columbian terracotta figures, vessels, and silver needles from the Andes and Mexico, sickles from the Bronze Age, ancient Egyptian figurines, and Byzantine bowls. In the international art market, high prices are paid for such ancient objects because the supply has run thin. Many countries now prohibit their export. The trade is permitted only on very rare occasions when official governmental export approvals are provided. The countries of origin regularly assert rights of ownership to whatever pops up on the market without the necessary papers. Obviously, in these cases, the suspicion is that the goods have been excavated illegally. The Bavarian Treasury allowed 280 individual pieces to be auctioned in the first two low-price sales in the summer of 2018 during two afternoons in the Schwabing neighborhood of Munich. By far the most expensive object was a massive Sasanian silver plate from the 4th century CE, with a minimum asking price of 9,000 euros. The cheapest items were two ancient Oriental clay weights exchanged for the price of a pack of cigarettes, 5 euros. The responsible office for taxation will no longer reveal what was sold and what prices on those 2 days. Because of tax secrecy, the press spokesperson, Florian Schöner, said in response to questions, "I hope you understand." Tax secrecy is also the answer to the question of just how the state of Bavaria came to possess these ancient cultural goods in the first place. The source may be reconstructed, however. In fact, these ancient cultural wares came from auctions raided by Department SG-622 of the District Criminal Office almost exactly 20 years ago. In 1997 and 1998, about 3,000 pieces were seized from a Turkish dealer named Aydin D., who had lived in Munich since 1979, and from other dealers and collectors, discovered in such hiding spots as a rebuilt attic room or behind a double wall. The total value was given at the time as 30 million Deutschmarks. D. might have drawn attention 10 years earlier. He had sold the American art dealer Peggy G. a centuries-old mosaic depicting the Archangel Gabriel for about $1.2 million in a duty-free warehouse in Geneva. The sacred artwork had been stolen from a church in Cyprus. It was offered a little later for $20 million to the Getty Museum in Malibu, which discovered the dubious origin and informed the Cypriot church. After being held in custody for 1 year during the investigation, D. was sentenced to a 2-year suspended sentence because he hadn't paid taxes on his share of the $350,000. Later, he disputed his participation. There were no searches conducted with respect to him at that time. The impounded antiquities had been stored since 2001 in a climatized room in the Building for Criminological Technology of the District Criminal Office while a search was conducted for the rightful owners. Plainly, this didn't proceed too swiftly. In spring 2002, the German Foreign Office warned the Bavarian Ministry of Justice in unusually blunt terms that there was increasing international pressure on Germany from Peru and various Cypriot officials for the return of these artworks that had been illegally taken from their countries of origin and had been seized from Mr. D. The government in Cyprus sent Germany an unsigned diplomatic message known as a verbal note demanding the return of the stolen goods. The authorities perceived no violation of the law. The return occurred only in the summer of 2013 and included only a small portion of the goods that had been seized. Cyprus received approximately 170 returned items, among them a Byzantine fresco from the 6th century depicting St. Thomas, estimated value of 5 million euros to 8 million euros, that had evidently been stolen from a church in the northern part of the country following the Turkish occupation in 1974. Beata Merk, the Minister of Justice for Bavaria at the time, was quoted as saying that she was glad that after all these years a majority of the treasures had been returned to their homelands. The politician, a member of the Christian Socialist Union Party, didn't let on at the time that there were still thousands of cultural goods in the custody of the Bavarian state. Another 7 years later, Bavaria finally wanted to conclude the case and the search for owners, and to collect what it could for the tax debts from the Munich auctions. Of course, the general regulations for the protection of cultural goods must be followed, explained Florian Schoener of the Bavarian State Tax Authority. But rightful third parties, especially other countries, that are affected by the current auction are not known. The objects are in particular not listed in any relevant indexes. Georgia Solomontos, cultural attaché for the Cypriot Embassy in Berlin, confirmed that his country didn't have any more claims regarding the two prior auctions. After examination by the Department of Antiquities, we were informed that no antiquities from Cyprus were offered for sale in these two auctions in Munich. What can be done with illegally excavated and exported objects, which naturally don't show up in any listings because neither their discovery nor their export nor their sale is known to their country of origin? The Peruvian ambassador in Berlin, Elmer Schaller, replies, "Unfortunately, neither the Bavarian state government nor the Bavarian treasury contacted our embassy to determine the legitimacy of these cultural goods." The press spokesman, Florian Schoener, doesn't see a problem. "The law for the protection of cultural goods does not preclude liquidation if the preconditions set forth are met, especially the duty of care in Section 41 GSG. Were stolen art to be included in an auction by the Treasury, the acquirers would not be permitted to export the pieces bought in Munich, once enactment of the German law for protection of cultural goods was in effect." Peru's representative, Elmer Schaller, went to work on the issue. "Through the appropriate channels, our embassy sent a message to the German Foreign Office to communicate our request to immediately cancel the auction of these Peruvian, or presumptively Peruvian, objects, so that their authenticity and the rightful ownership could be determined." A gold mask had already been returned to Peru following proceedings. And the Egyptian authorities hired a lawyer to demand information from the German authorities. "We were not informed," explained the embassy spokesperson. "The Egyptian embassy suspects that the works sold in Munich were stolen and belong to Egypt. We did not give permission. It surprises us quite a bit that an authority would do such a thing." After diplomatic intervention, the third auction was finally canceled. No further auctions have since been announced.